Rwanda has its first electric vehicle. Known as the e-Golf, the vehicle imported by global car maker Volkswagen will be used for the company's local ride-hailing service. VW, which has a global target of producing 600,000 electric cars a year by 2022, is starting small in Kigali, importing 50 e-Golf models over the next few months.
Wall Street went into rally mode Wednesday as Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell cut interest rates and signaled he's ready for a pause. In the third rate cut this year, the Fed lowered its target range by a quarter percentage point to 1.5% to 1.75%, a move highly anticipated by investors. What they want to know now is what happens next.
Buyer shares were up on Wednesday, but so were the number of U.S. plaintiffs mounting lawsuits against it. 42,700 is more than twice the tally in July, potentially raising the level of any future settlement with users of Roundup and other glyphosate weed killers who blame them for their cancer.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here with us on this Thursday, October the 31st. It's 5:10 in the morning. Another business day underway on the program today. Thought Leader Thursday. David Fowler is here from Associated Bank. He's an SVP of Capital Markets at Associated. And we'll be talking more about Brexit and the global economic growth slowing in recent quarters. David will be up first this morning in the first segment. A little bit later in the program, Andrea Densham will be here from the Shedd Aquarium, Senior Director of Conservation Policy there. Business leaders met recently at Shedd to discuss restoring vitality of the Great Lakes. And we'll tell you a little bit more about the conversations that were had there and the plans that are being made. So all of that coming up today on our Halloween edition of The Opening Bell. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street. Stock futures are falling on a report that China doubts a long-term trade pact is possible with the Trump administration. Dow futures down 99 points, almost a third. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are off about a third as well. The trading day well underway in Europe and in London, off by nearly a percent. The FTSE down about 71 points in Germany and France, lower by about a half a percent. Trading day ending in Asia with the Nikkei up nearly a third. Hong Kong up nearly 239 points, almost a full percent. In China, markets are lower. And oil is trading at $54.90 a barrel. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. The Federal Reserve, as you heard in the opening montage, cutting rates by a quarter of a percent for the third time this year.
We took this step to help keep the U.S. economy strong in the face of global developments and to provide some insurance against ongoing risks.
That's the Fed Chair Jerome Powell telling reporters that those risks include uncertainty in global economic markets. Personal income and spending figures for September due out today. Those things will move the markets likely this afternoon. Ford and United Auto Workers have reached a deal that will avoid a strike. Let's begin this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. David Fowler is here, Senior Vice President of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. David, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you for having me.
A little bit of things have changed in the Brexit conversation since the last time you were here. It looks like there might be an extension. What's the headline from Brexit?
Well, it looks like it's the never-ending story, really. We have an extension to January 31st. We have an election coming up in the UK, which looks very likely. Theoretically, it isn't in stone yet because it has to go through the House of Lords, which it will go later this week. But it's pretty definite that we'll have an election December 12th. And hopefully this will come out with some kind of definitive answer. However, I think the odds are probably slim that we'll get anything definitive, and we may have a repeat of what we have right now.
Yeah. I remember Boris Johnson, Prime Minister Johnson, saying we are leaving October 31st no matter what.
Do or die.
Yeah,
huh?
Right. Do or die.
I'd rather be dead in a ditch.
Right.
I guess he hasn't found the ditch, and I guess we're not going to do. He is, you know, kind of blaming Parliament because in reality, he did bring a deal, the WAB, the Withdrawal Agreement Bill, that was passed to the second stage, which is really just something that allows Parliament to start looking at it. The problem that Parliament had was that the time period that it was allowed to discuss this bill was actually a day shorter than the time given to the wild animal and circus bill, which covered 19 animals in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
That was given 4 days wow. of parliamentary reading. The WAB was given 3. And, you know, because of time constraints. So people are very concerned that something of this momentous importance, you know, needed a little bit longer than, you know, how do we deal with tigers in zoos?
Mm-hmm. What's the level of uncertainty, not only in the UK from a business standpoint, but how is it impacting the rest of the world as well?
Well, I think in the European Union, it's a little less so in that if you look at kind of trade flows, Great Britain, and the United Kingdom represents about 20% of trade flows within the European Union. People have become, I think, much more prepared for a no-deal Brexit now. The last 9 months for the European Union has been one where people have been preparing and they're generating kind of alternative plans. Certainly investments are going to be, you know, certainly in Ireland, for example, which will be probably the second most affected country. You can see that I'm just back from there. You can see that there is kind of a general kind of wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Certain things are slowing a little bit. Northern Ireland has seen nearly complete stop in overseas investment because really people don't know what's going on. There have been a couple of large industries that have actually closed. Short Bus, for example, closed just last week, which is a big bus manufacturer in Europe. So I think for them, you know, we're seeing issues. The car companies, for example, in Britain, both Nissan and Toyota have signaled that they're waiting and seeing before they make any big investments, and which is a signal that maybe they're going to make disinvestments if Brexit goes the wrong way. So I think that's pretty significant. So, you know, when you look at certainly EU growth, like GDP is kind of running in this kind of 1.3, 1.5%. You know, people are kind of just, it's motoring along, but at a very low pace, and certainly at a lesser pace than probably it would be normally.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there are also, you know, questions about the tariff wars between the U.S. and the EU and that kind of stuff as well floating around. So it's more than just Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, U.S. GDP came in at 1.9%, so we're not too far away from the U.K. at all.
No, and that's down, you know, when you think about, like, first quarter GDP was a lot closer to 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're seeing kind of, which may be part of the trade war as well. You know, tariff wars, generally, nobody wins. And we're seeing, you know, we've seen a consistent decline in GDP this year. For the last 3 consumer confidence numbers that came out, each one was lower than the next. I think, you know, there is a certain amount of apprehension globally by consumers. You know, when we look at the stock market here, it's, you know, all the main indices have done really well, but they, with the exception of the S&P making a high. Earlier this week, most of the indices haven't really changed much since July. And I think there is this kind of general global kind of slowdown that we're seeing.
So what's the play for American investors looking into the UK and Europe? Is it one where they are also preparing for the no deal? Is it sitting on the sidelines? What's happening with investors?
I think there's a lot of sitting on the sidelines, really. This one is just, and I think people have tried to predict what was going to happen. You know, they've been doing it since, you know, before the end of March. And each time, you know, predictions have proved incorrect. So I think people are now just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen. And certainly, I don't think we're going to see the uncertainty lift anytime soon. For, you know, U.S. Importers, so people importing stuff from the U.K., you know, I think... you're going to see sterling remain quite weak, which means that the imports will be relatively cheap. That'll make it, you know, easy for people here. I think it's going to be difficult for U.S. exporters into the U.K. But a lot of that will also be predicated on if there's some kind of a trade deal between the U.S. and the U.K. after they eventually leave the EU, assuming they actually leave. So it's very confusing. I think the only thing that's certain is that uncertainty will remain for quite a bit longer.
Yeah. Global finance ministers, I know the IMF and some others, they've actually had a little positive outlook, a little bit more positive outlook for next year. The International Monetary Fund said that economic growth could accelerate next year globally. Do they know something that we don't?
They must, because certainly if you look at, you know, what we've seen in the growth tendencies in, for example, the U.S., in the European Union, and China, in all three, growth is declining. And they are the three biggest. So I don't know where they're going to see this growth. And certainly they also said in that report that they were concerned about tariff wars as well and mm-hmm. trade wars. And that was their kind of get out of jail clause in this one. So if it doesn't work out, that's why. Sometimes the IMF is a bit like you're either stockbroker or you're a realtor. You're like, you know, when they tell you the market's bad, you got to start getting worried because they generally will push an optimistic view.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be nice if we saw 3% growth globally, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and the trade war feels like it's we're entering the 2020 election cycle now with the Iowa caucuses are just about 100 days away. It feels like that's not going to be settled in an election year, is it?
I don't think so. There are reports that kind of stage one of the deal is being papered as we speak. Hopefully that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the markets are going to be uncertain because, you know, as you say, the elections are coming up. And also, you know, if you look at all the indices, the equity indices so far this year have generated between like 15 and 25%, depending on which one you're looking at. We're coming up, like we're starting November this week. A lot of people, I think, will start to say, you know, that was a pretty good run. And maybe we'll just take some profit out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And going into an election year, you tend to get people kind of being a little more cautious. So I think, you know, the equity highs that we've seen may be the highs we will see for a little while. And I think certainly consumers seem to be getting a little more worried.
From the business world, it feels like companies are also getting a little bit more worried. We're in the height of earnings season. A number of the S&P 500 companies have reported earnings misses in the last quarter, which would be the third quarter. They've had some forecasts for decreased growth. Their outlooks have not been as rosy as they have been in the past. That's another part of this equation, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, if you look at particularly the companies that have lost, you know, missed by the most, they've tended to be, you know, the large companies that are impacted by the tariff war.
You know, Caterpillar, companies like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, we have, you know, clients that we deal with in the bank, you know, in Wisconsin that are booming and can't get enough staff. But part of that may be because, you know, they're in smaller locations where there is the labor pool is smaller. I think generally, you know, we are going to see a retrenchment. And I think, you know, if the really large companies that make up, you know, the Dow or the S&P, if they're the ones that are missing their earnings estimates, that will filter down. And I think, you know, these are the big employers. And they're the companies that people look at to get a clue as to what's going on in the economy. And if your friend works for a large firm and they gets laid off, you know, are you going to go out and buy a new car? Possibly not. So there is that knock-on effect. And I think with everything else that's going on, I think it may be a time when markets consolidate and consumers basically, you know, keep the money in their pocket rather than spending it maybe as loosely as they might.
Yeah, and I remember what happened last year at this time in the markets. The markets lost quite a bit in November and December.
Yes, they did. They did. I think this year, well, you know, it's a fool's journey to try to guess the markets, but I suspect we won't see a move like that. I hope we don't. But I think we will see a gradual decline as people basically take some profit out.
How much has the interest rate environment played into some of this? I've heard some analysts say that the Fed's decision to raise interest rates last year probably created some of what we're talking about. Obviously, the trade is a big part of that, too. But now that they're backpedaling and going back and cutting interest rates, how will that affect in the months ahead, do you think?
I think that we're getting to levels where, you know, each successive interest rate cut will have less and less impact. We saw, for example, recently with mortgage rates moving down, a lot of people were trying to refinance. But, you know, housing sales are not, particularly around here, are not particularly booming. Mm-hmm. I think that most people who have done the kind of refinancing side, so from the consumer side, I don't think there's much left to do. I think from a business point of view, there aren't that many businesses who are waiting for this last 0.25%. Now we'll start investing. You know, I think it's a little bit like pushing on a kind of a wet noodle. You know, there's a limit how far it's going to go. And the risk that the Fed is running by lowering rates now is that if something happens, something bad happens, that's one less thing they have to use in their arsenal. And, you know, we found out in the past that, you know, things can go from really good to really bad fairly quickly.
Yeah. The sidelines aren't necessarily a bad place, are they? to be?
Probably not. Yeah. You know, sometimes, you know, the wisest course is discretion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this may not be a bad time to sit back and just kind of reassess.
It's always good chatting with you. I know people are probably listening right now saying, how can I get a hold of David and have a one-on-one? How can they do that?
Well, the easy way to get in touch with me or any of my colleagues would be to phone our trading desk at 866-524-8836. Or you can always email me on david.faller, that's david.faller, at associatedbank.com.
Come back and see us.
I'd love to.
David Faller, SVP of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to more of those conversations at WGNradio.com. Also, head over to associatedbank.com/thought leadership to hear more there and meet our thought leaders. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Thursday here in the opening bell. More than 30 internationally recognized businesses, also science and policy leaders, gathered this week to discuss efforts to protect the Great Lakes from threats of invasive species like the Asian carp. Shedd Aquarium, front and center with this, and joining us this morning to talk more about the meeting and what's happening, Andrea Densham, who's Senior Director of Conservation Policy at Shedd Aquarium. Andrea, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thank you for having me this rainy morning.
And happy Halloween as well to you. I know this is
and to you.
The idea that the Asian carp might get into the Great Lakes is a very scary thing to think about, and I know this was front and center this week with business leaders and the Shedd.
Absolutely. We had the opportunity, and we're hoping to do this on a very regular basis, to bring business leaders together from across the Great Lakes Basin to Shedd Aquarium to learn from our scientists firsthand about emerging issues across the Great Lakes. Obviously, Asian carp is one of those threats. We have, unfortunately, more than 180 invasive species that have come made their way into the Great Lakes. We want to keep Asian carp out. We've been able to do it thus far. We're close to being able to do that. We're hopefully going to be able to take that across the finish line and get that done. But we absolutely need the leadership of business to be able to do that. So we're really excited to be able to have the opportunity to bring binational leaders together from across the region to talk about those issues and to be able to grow their leadership role as conservation advocates.
Yeah, and the Great Lakes Business Network is the group involved here. And going through the list of the different businesses that are involved, a bunch of different kinds of businesses and big businesses as well. How important is it for the conservationists to have these folks on their side?
It is critically important. There's a reason why we pulled this meeting together on Monday. We really hope to begin to do this not only with our partners at the Great Lakes Business Network, but with other business leaders across the region. You know, we were able to have folks from the size of Peapod to local restaurant leaders in the region there. They're the ones who understand that the Great Lakes economy funds and supports a $16 billion tourist industry, a $7 billion fisheries, and $1.6 million jobs. That's a critical driver. And while science is critically important, it is also important for our elected officials to hear from our business leaders to understand that if we don't have a healthy environment in Great Lakes, it's going to really have a devastating impact on our local economy.
Talk to us a little bit about that. If, God forbid, the Asian carp gets into the Great Lake, what kind of things happen first? What would be the first signs of that? And then how significant could the damage become?
The damage could be devastating. There was a very important study that came out of the University of Michigan over the last couple months that noted that if the Asian carp were able to make their way in, one concern and one idea had been that they might not be able to live and thrive. Well, they will. We know they will, and the Great Lakes and the University of Michigan study illuminated that. It would begin to really have a devastating impact on that $7 billion fisheries and on the tourism, which, that $16 billion tourism industry, which part of that is about being able to go out on the Great Lakes and enjoy sports fishing and just engaging in sporting events, sporting activities generally. We know that we can stop this, though. Well, we feel highly confident that, with the support of our governors and our binational partners, we can be able to take a good crack at this. The next step is signing a great clean agreement with the U.S. Corps of Engineers. Our governor taking a leadership role there. I'm going to be going in November to D.C. to make sure that we can secure funding for it. And then we need to get about allowing the U.S. Corps of Engineers to do what they're great at, which is build deterrents to keep them out of the lake.
So depending on who you listen to, the survey show that the Asian carp, at least the larvae, is 50 miles from Lake Michigan. Is that a little too close for comfort for you and the other conservationists that are working on this?
It's far too close for comfort. Again, I think we know that if we move forward with the effort that the U.S. Corps of Engineers has laid out after a good decade's worth of work on this, that we can prevent them from moving forward. But this is an urgent issue. We need to be able to move forward with it. And once we get that moving forward, and we hope we can get a lot of this going in the next month, and definitely by the end of this year, then we need to get back to the work of building and restoring the health and vitality of both our sports fishing and our commercial fisheries and just the general ecological health of the Great Lakes.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to ask you one more question about what the Army Corps is doing, and that is they want to modify the Brandon Road Lock and Dam.
That's true.
So what do they hope to do that would be an extra step or deterrent against the Asian carp?
Yeah, the idea, the plan as it stands right now, which has been well vetted and engaged by not only conservation experts and scientists, but business leaders and folks in the shipping industry. The idea is to develop a chain of smart technologies, right, that will be engineered across that channel at Brandon Roads. It includes an acoustic fish deterrent, a bubble curtain, and electronic barriers. And the real goal here is to, as you said so clearly, to help prevent Asian carp from moving its way from that Mississippi basin into the Great Lakes Basin. I think this really illuminates that many of our ecological systems are connected to each other. We often think of them as separate pieces, but they're very much connected. And we are connected to our colleagues who are in the Mississippi Basin, as I think we don't often talk enough about. So our economic well-being is connected to our colleagues who live and work on that basin, on the river as well.
You alluded to all of the other projects, all of the other things that conservationists would like to work on because this is just draining so much money. Talk to us a little bit more about those other things. Where would we be seeing money go to? What are the issues besides the Asian carp that need to be focused on?
A healthy and vibrant Great Lakes means that we're going to be able to build back up the native fish and the forage fish that are necessary for us to have vibrant sports fishing and commercial fisheries in the Great Lakes. So often, we're at Chet Aquarium, we get to talk about both, and I'm lucky enough to be able to work with scientists that work both in the ocean and in the Great Lakes. We talk so much about seafood and oceans fisheries. Not enough attention has gone to how critically important Great Lakes fisheries have been and could be moving forward for us. So that's one really important thing. That body of water that we can see every day from Shedd Aquarium is also where we get our drinking water. So keeping it healthy and vibrant and clean is also critically important. Making sure that nutrient pollution and issues that are related to that, like algae blooms that are happening to our colleagues in the Erie area and in other parts of the Great Lakes don't happen here in the Lake Michigan area. Those are just a series of things, but we know that if we can get this one piece fixed, that we can move our way back to those other issues, which is really important for us.
Yeah, and I think people need to be reminded more often than not, the Great Lakes are the largest freshwater ecosystem on Earth. You go down the list of the different plants and animals that call it home, from the bald eagle to the gray wolf, all the way down to the frog, to the bullfrog. So there's an ecosystem here that, if disrupted, could have major effects on life everywhere.
Absolutely. I've been camping up north in Michigan each Labor Day, and two Labor Days in a row have been able to see, and I'm old enough to know, to be a part of the time when we weren't seeing bald eagles on a regular basis. For the last two, I've been seeing them fishing in our Great Lakes. We need to move back towards a time where not only the bald eagle can fish in our Great Lakes, but you know, our kids and grandkids and generations to come will be able to see it as a vibrant place to see from the small frogs and the Baleen's turtles, who we've been helping to restore. They're an endangered species. Some of our colleagues at Shedd have been able to get back up and on their feet again, as it were. So you're absolutely right. This is a critical issue, and addressing Brandon Rhodeswell and Agent Karp will allow us to get back to the rest of those issues.
Shedd Aquarium has a long history of fighting invasive species. I know there have been more than 100, close to 200 in the Great Lakes alone. I wonder if you could talk to us a little bit about how hard it is to fight that invasive species once they're in. And I know I saw a story recently about how Shedd was involved in just trying to get rid of a plant species and how long that took, the invasive plant species. So the idea is prevention at all costs.
Absolutely. We had the opportunity on Monday to hear from our director of freshwater research, Karen Murchie, and she was incredibly articulate about once an invasive gets in an ecosystem, whether it's an invasive species on the terrestrial land or in the or in the lake. One of our new colleagues is working on invasive mussels. And, you know, as you probably remember, we've been talking for years and years about zebra mussels and the impact they've had. It gets in shipping channels. It gets on boats. It gets on, it gets in the way of our fresh water coming into our fresh water systems. And MWRD has to deal with it all the time. Once it's there, they're very hard to get rid of. And then we spend an inordinate amount of money trying to stop them. So when we have the opportunity like this one with Asian carp, it's really important to stop it before it gets in there so that we can spend our time on building up the healthy, vibrant native fish and other habitats rather than trying to prevent the invasive ones.
As with everything, cost is a big deal. Is there enough money to handle all of these problems, and is that one of the big challenges?
That's absolutely a challenge. I think one of the things we've worked really hard on, and our colleagues at the Alliance for the Great Lakes have absolutely taken a leadership role on, is developing a bipartisan and binational support for protecting the Great Lakes. We have been able to grow the amount of congressional resources for example, the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and there's bipartisan support for this effort to ensure that we're keeping Asian carp out. There's a reason why, though, I'm going to D.C. next month, and that's to make sure that not only the Great Lakes delegation is full on in support and it can take that congressional appropriation across the finish line, but that the rest of our colleagues from across the country understand how critically important it is to all of us in the Great Lakes Basin.
Well, Andre, we appreciate you being on with us this morning. Thank you for all your efforts in keeping the Great Lakes beautiful and clean and free of these invasive species. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Have a good day.
You too. Andrea Dentium, Senior Director of Conservation Policy at Shedd Aquarium. You can find more online at sheddaquarium.org. And you can also find more about the Great Lakes Business Network online as well at gbusinessnetwork.com. glbusinessnetwork.com. That's glbusinessnetwork.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street this morning. Dow futures are down 93 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures off anywhere from a quarter of a percent to a third. The market day in Europe is also in the red so far. London leading the way down there, down nearly a full percent. And in Asia, the market day ended mixed. Stocks higher in Tokyo and Hong Kong. and lower in China. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Today, day number two of the FFA Convention and Expo in Indianapolis. It will continue through Saturday, and at the closing session, the new national officer team will be introduced. About 67,000 blue-jacketed members of the FFA in Indianapolis for this event that started yesterday. Prices in the marketplace yesterday, the grain market found strength in corn basically because of weather and slow harvesting. And as a result, December corn ended up 4.25, but wheat ended lower, down 1.75 cents a bushel, and November soybeans ended a penny a bushel lower in the trade. Nearly an all-green screen in livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange. February lean hogs up 30 cents a hundredweight on the close, but October live cattle dropped 35 cents a hundredweight, while October feeder cattle gained 6 cents a hundredweight. Turning to an interesting note from South Dakota's two senators, Senators John Thune and Mike Rounds, Republican senators from South Dakota, introduced the U.S. Beef Integrity Act. That's a bill which would make certain that the product of the USA label only goes on beef and beef products exclusively derived from one or more animals born, raised, and processed in the United States. That's being applauded by cattle producers in South Dakota. That's Ag Biz for today. I'm Orion Samuelson. You have a great day.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple more stories before we leave you here this morning. China's factory activity shrank more sharply than expected in October amid weak consumer demand and a tariff war with Washington. A survey by the industry group China Federation of Logistics and Purchasing shows the monthly Purchasing Managers Index declined to 49.3 from September's 49.8 on a 100-point scale. Numbers below 50 show activity contracting. The head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago is stepping down. Anne Pramaggiore resigned its chair last week. Her resignation comes after she abruptly retired as CEO of Exelon Utility, the parent company of ComEd, earlier this month amid a federal investigation of lobbyist activities. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Thursday, October 31st. Personal income and spending figures for September are due today. Analysts forecast a 0.3% gain in income and a 0.2% increase in spending. Also today, we'll see the weekly jobless unemployment report. Economists expect 0.6% increase in the employment cost index, 217,000 workers filing first-time claims. The Challenger job cut report is due today. Chicago PMI and the EIA natural gas report. Earnings from Blue Apron, Dunkin', Estee Lauder, Fiat Chrysler, Kraft Heinz, Royal Dutch Shell, and Pinterest all coming today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, October the 31st.